When you're lost in the darkness, look for The Pod. Specifically, the Prestige TV podcast on the Ringer Podcast Network, where we're breaking down every new episode of HBO's The Last of Us. On Sunday nights, grab your battery and join Van Lathan and Charles Holmes for an instant reaction to the latest episode.
Then head back to the QZ on Tuesdays for a deep dive with Joanna Robinson and Mallory Rubin. From character arcs to video game adaptation choices, story themes to needle drops, we'll parse every inch of this cordyceps-coded universe. Watch out for mouth tendrils and follow along on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now on the Wallet app on iPhone.
Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Okay. You win. You know what? Fake racing is just harder than it looks. Oh, no, man. Come on. Listen, kid, it's an arcade romance. It's doomed, you know? It's messy. It's self-defeating. No, you don't want this in your life.
Worth a shot.
Yes. I respect it.
Hello, welcome back to the Prestige TV podcast feed. This week on our journey across these here United States, we are in Tennessee. I'm Joanna Robinson. Joining me today at the raceway? Is that what you call it? It's Rob Mahoney. Hi, Rob.
At the track, you know, just getting a few laps in, driving in some circles.
I cannot wait to talk to you about a sport that I know nothing about. We're here to talk about episode 7 of Poker Face, which is called The Future of the Sport. This is our weekly check-in with Poker Face. This is kind of an interesting episode. There's like a few tweaks on the format this week, so we're going to talk about that a bit. And we've got a bunch of emails from folks writing in with their pitches for their episodes of Poker Face, and also some responses to some of the wild and crazy things that we have said on this podcast. Before we get into the future of the sport, we do need to check in on something that we introduced Rob to last week.
Yes.
Which is Leah Michelle Literacy Corner. We found out after we recorded last week's podcast, because if you listen to last week's Poker Face Prestige podcast, you will remember that there is a literacy joke that Tim Meadows' character talks about, how there's like a section on his Wikipedia about his literacy, this sort of like awful rumor that was started about him about whether or not he can read. We since looked up, and yes, there is a section on Leah Michelle's Wikipedia page about this rumor about her literacy. And then Steve Allman and I, you know, journalists that we are, sent Rob a few TikToks on this subject. So Rob, where are you on Leah Michelle Literacy Corner? How are you feeling about it?
My world has been shaken. I gotta admit, like the evidence you sent was very compelling. I think this has moved from rumor to fact. Like, okay. I don't know how you could dispute these particular clips, in which in particular, there was a smash cut compilation of all of the various award shows she's been a part of as a presenter, in which she never, to an uncanny degree, never reads the name on the card. It's very concerning stuff.
We don't want to get sued, so I think we should keep it in Rumorville, but so Leah Michelle's lawyers don't come for us. But
okay, fine.
If you have not looked this up, I really do urge you. I think it's probably not true. I just think the video evidence is very compelling.
So, she's not helping herself, that's
she's
for sure.
Not in any way. Also, we want to do Charlie's root check-in that we started last week. One of our listeners wrote in with this really brilliant idea for me, which is check the license plates in every episode. And that has just helped unlock everything for us. So here we go. We started in Laughlin, Nevada. We went to Albuquerque, New Mexico. We went to Houston, Texas. We got some information on the metal band tour. That was sort of a vague one that I was doing, but it's they mentioned Kenosha in this episode. So we're in the like Milwaukee, Chicago area for that one. That info came from our listener, Jonathan. The Mossy Oaks Retirement Home is in Georgia. We were in Seneca Lake, New York last week for the dinner theater. And here at the track, we are in Tennessee. Don't let Peachtree or the mention of peaches fool you. The license plates say Tennessee, not Georgia. So we are in Tennessee. How do you feel? Like, I think we need to make like an actual Google map and like plot this sort of like Indiana Jones style route around the United States. Is this making any sense to you, Rob?
Yeah, I just need like the little muscle car doing the airplane flight across the country. Although now that you lay it out in that respect, it kind of feels like the New York episode might have been moved around a little bit. Like maybe that wasn't the original place in the order, and for whatever reason, they thought it might be more comfortable there.
I'm very curious what the original order was and how they've mixed it around, because I need to double check next week. No spoilers for next week, but Rob and I have seen that episode. I feel like we're in California. I don't know how we could not be in California next week. We'll check. Yeah. I'll check the plates. I haven't checked the plates yet, but we're really excited to talk to you guys about next week. This week was like a little bit thinner on the ground, I think, especially like missing a lot of the jokes that we felt like really floated a lot of the other episodes. How did you feel about sort of the jokes per minute and or this episode in general?
I think there's some things to recommend it, mostly kind of structural, interesting quirks of the episode. But overall, I think it might have the least meat on the bone of any of the episodes so far. And it felt like they knew it too, honestly, just based on the runtime, based on the way it's presented. It feels a little wanting.
Yeah. A little thin. I think a little bit of I was really looking forward to Tim Blake Nelson as a guest star. And I just didn't feel like, you know, he's not even in the majority of this episode. This is really Charles Melton's episode. Charles Melton, known for being one of the Reggies in Riverdale.
I don't even know what that means, but I'm going to take your word for it.
Plays a race car driver named Davis McDowell, who is up against an older race car driver, Keith Owens. What exactly happens in this episode, Rob?
Yeah, I think you led it in pretty well. I mean, this episode is about a bitter stock car racing rivalry. And yeah, I said bitter stock car racing rivalry. That is the sport in question and the future of the sport, the title of this episode. Between those two drivers, and in the lead car, you have Davis McDowell, as you mentioned, who's kind of a hot-headed upstart character trying to make a name for himself. And behind him, you have Kyle Owens, played by Tim Blake Nelson, who is a driver in a lineage of drivers, right? He was kind of drafting off of his family name a little bit. So you have tensions between them boiling to the point that Owens decides to sneak into his rival's garage and tamper with his car, sabotage his car. But Davis sees him in the act and instead of fixing it up, decides to further compromise his own vehicle and then egg on Owens' daughter, Katie, who's an aspiring driver herself, to do a practice race in his tampered car. And so Katie crashes, drama ensues, and that's where we find Charlie, who's working at the go-kart racetrack, as you mentioned up top, Joe, with Davis's mother, and is sympathetic to Davis until she finds out that he might be more involved in the crash than he's letting on. Do you have anything to add, Joe?
No, I think you really crushed it.
Thank you.
I'm going to say a couple things. First of all, if you need to email us about anything that we've said, both now or for the rest of the email, you can email us at hobbitsanddragons@gmail.com. And the reason you could use that email is that we continue to debate about Charlie's superhero status. In this episode, she refers to herself as a cancer dog, right? She's got this like special thing that she does.
Known superheroes, cancer dogs.
We got an email from Bertrand who wrote, Natasha Lyonne gave her character a decent working title superhero name in the pilot episode, Lady Galahad. Also, let's add another superpower into the mix, Charlie's ability to earn the trust of the people around her. Admittedly, this is also a Natasha Lyonne superpower. A grill master wouldn't reveal their secret recipe to a random temporary employee, but if that employee were Natasha Lyonne, they totally would. I buy it. So what do you make of Bertrand's contribution to Is Charlie a Superhero discourse?
I mean, that is a valid point about her, you know, as we've circled around before, her true superpower being empathy or love or however you want to describe it. The show definitely does, you know, trade in that space. But this is not a superpower. This is, as we've discussed many, many times, a preternatural sense, a heightened sensitivity, sure, not a superpower.
Great. Follow-up email from Morgan, who says, my biggest poker face thought that I have, Enrique, is that in addition to her superpower, she has to be some kind of bad luck charm because she keeps going to places and then people get murdered.
Yeah.
And shows like Columbo, Psych, or even shows like Supernatural, where the early seasons had them traveling around with very few recurring characters, the main characters were officially some type of private investigators or intentionally searching out crimes to solve. Charlie stumbles across them, sometimes only figuring out there is a crime because of her superpower. I don't mind it, but I find it interesting. So I will just say to Morgan, like, the follow-up is that, like, long-running Murder, She Wrote joke, that the idea of, like, Jessica Fletcher, the lead sleuth of Murder, She Wrote, who is a crime novelist, not a necessarily, like, a private investigator, but wherever she went, be it in Cabot Cove, where the body count was high, or, like, a trip to Chicago, wherever she went, there was a murder. So the, like, the joke about Murder, She Wrote is that Jessica Fletcher's the one doing all the crime, because wherever she goes, crime follows. But yeah, this, how long, again, can this premise of Charlie, who is not even a crime novelist, she's just a humble go-kart slash barbecuer slash old folks home employee, how long do we feel like we can hang with this premise of murder or attempted murder happens wherever she goes, Rob?
Yeah, it's nice that we at least in this episode had an attempted murder or right. attempted manslaughter. I'm not sure what the charge would officially be in this particular episode, but it's nice that we get some variety on that front. I do agree, if you're Charlie, at some point it does start to get a little concerning. That the people are just dying left and right all around you. And maybe there really is something to that, like, you know, that roommate theorem where if, like, you keep having roommates who are assholes, maybe you're the asshole, maybe you're the problem. I don't know. Something's following Charlie around the country. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's a supernatural force all its own.
I've never heard that phrased in the roommate point of view, but to tick off a box for our coverage this week, I will mention the TV show Justified and say there's a great line in Justified, which is, if you meet an asshole in the morning, you've been an asshole. If you meet assholes all day, you're the asshole. So, yeah. We also get this email from Sean that I loved. Sean points out that the two main characters in last week's episode, Exit Stage Death, were bickering former co-stars. They're named Michael and Kathleen. Is it a reach to think the creative inspiration or even dream casting might have been Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner of Romancing the Stone and the War of the Roses fame, with perhaps Catherine Zeta-Jones as their intended victim? No shade on Ellen Barkin, Tim Meadows, and Jamila Jamil, but perhaps that would have been a fun trio to see. So what do you think of this Michael and Kathleen dream casting here?
That's incredible. Look, yeah. The readers are going next level with this stuff. It would not have ever occurred to me, but it's kind of right there on the page, to be honest with you.
I know. If they could have gotten Michael and Kathleen and Catherine Zeta-Jones, like, phenomenal stuff. And having just seen Quantumania last night, no, two nights ago, what is time? Michael Douglas can do anything.
Maybe there's time, because it was officially announced since our last episode, Poker Face back for season two. Big news. Maybe Michael Douglas, you know, but let's just go ahead and get that contract all signed, sealed, delivered.
Yeah. Give us that War of the Roses bickering energy. I love that for us. All right. So speaking of season two, we got a couple pitches. We will get back to stock car racing, I promise. I'm not that averse to talking about sports. But we got a couple pitches as we asked for people for, like, locations and premises for future episodes, season two episodes of Poker Face. I'm going to hit you with some ideas, and I'm going to, like, you tell me which one you like the best, okay? So Peter suggests New Jersey, a water park modeled after Action Park, which is apparently a water park so risky and dangerous that there's a documentary called Class Action Park on HBO, which I had never heard of. But so, you know, water park employee as a job for Charlie, interacting with teenagers, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Justin writes in, Santa Rosa Beach, Florida golf course. So an excuse for Charlie to interact with douchebag rich people, which is always a fun idea. And we're in Florida. So that's one idea. Margie suggests Cape Cod, and that Charlie is working at one of the nearby restaurants serving lobster rolls, fried clam strips, and clam chowder. The death could also happen at one of our many beaches, perhaps with a shark scare happening at the same time, or perhaps during a Cape Cod League baseball game. Another great locale will be Provincetown, which brings up all kind of wonderful gay-themed possibilities, or at the Kennedy compound. Okay. Charlie goes to the Kennedy compound. Sounds really fun. Fun fact. This is me, Joanna, just really quickly. I went to Cape Cod for the first time a couple summers ago, and we were driving around, and we were just driving near the Kennedy compound. Just, I don't know, we were driving around, and really scary security guys came out and were just sort of like, what are you doing here? And I was like, turning the car around, apparently, not coming anywhere near the Kennedy compound.
By driving around, do you mean casing the place?
You know how I like to rob, you know, political legacy families of these here United States. So yes,
we all
of course.
Have our hobbies.
And then Bertrand suggests Charlie on a boat, some kind of temporary deckhand work that she takes out of pure desperation. We can give Benjamin Brad a paycheck to scout out around the docks. Some gruff fishermen send him on his way. Charlie probably has a full conversation with a dead fish or something. Those creepy cold dead eyes, etc. Okay. Charlie on a boat. Charlie at a golf course in Florida. Charlie in Cape Cod. Charlie at a New Jersey water park. Which is your favorite?
I would say why pick and choose? Because the answer clearly is Charlie on a cruise ship. It's a boat. You got the rich people coming in. You've got the seafood. Look, you want to see people in a lobster bib? We can work that in. It's a good sight gag. And some of these things honestly do have basically like a functional water park on the premises for her to deal with, you know, brats of all ages. So I would love to see Charlie, the cruise ship employee. Maybe, honestly, in so many different capacities there, the sources for comedy are endless.
Last but not least, this ties into this episode about this idea of truth and truth detectors and how it works and how it doesn't. We got this email from Allison about the Monkey Time episode, the old folks home episode. And she wrote, I was thinking about your comment that Charlie was, quote unquote, tricked by the murderous ladies in episode 5. She did not perceive that they were lying to her when telling the story about their, quote unquote, protest back in the 1960s. Many have called Charlie a human lie detector. We know that the vulnerability of a lie detector is that it won't identify someone as untruthful if they believe it is the truth that they are telling. I think this was the case in episode 5. Those women believed that what they were doing was right and justified. So when they tell the story, that is what Charlie hears, and there's no element of untruth. It is only when she hears the story from another angle that she can compare the two. I think this is Charlie's magic. Not that she relies solely on detecting lies, but on understanding people. So that gets into this week's episode where we have a would-be murderer, or at least would-be coma inducer, who finds out about Charlie's special power and so works around it. So I kind of want to start there. So we get Davis finds out from Charlie and tests her early on,
yes,
before he's even trying to do crimes, about her ability to sniff out a lie. And since he knows that, there are a few situations in this episode where she asks a question and he answers with a question, or he answers truthfully, like, I found this in the car. You know, that all happened. Like, he keeps to things that actually happened, but skates the added layer, and she only hears the lie, overhears the lie to someone else. What did you think of that twist on the idea, Rob?
I really liked it. And you're right. The contrast, or our listener is right in terms of the contrast from Time of the Monkey. Because that was definitely a representation of a kind of truth as the person believed it, as the two ladies believed it. And this one is so premeditated. It's so calculated in terms of manipulating Charlie's power to basically, like, for a criminal to exonerate themselves, to clear their name, to point people in another direction. And it's so purposeful in a way that's honestly, like, pretty diabolical. And I think sets up this episode where this series of events in terms of the criminals we've seen is honestly, like, among the more, like, miserable things that anyone has done so far. Like, the in terms of the most malicious things. And yet, the punishment we get at the end, I think, is pretty light.
The yips?
That's it. The punishment is the yips.
Is the yips.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now on the Wallet app on iPhone.
Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch, subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Okay, so the episode starts with Tim Blake Nelson's character. Owens has the yips, right? We see it in the shaking of his hand. And by the end of the episode, again, because we've discussed this before, Charlie's not calling the cops and she's not a cop. So she has her like various forms of justice. And in this case, she sort of sows the seeds of doubt into Davis McDowell's head. And we see his hand shape and he's got the yips by the end of the episode. And you're saying this is not enough for the fact that he tried to at least grievously injure Katie, if not kill her, and make her father believe that he's the one who did it in the first place.
Yeah, I actually think there's a pretty interesting moral dilemma at the center of this episode that not many of the previous ones have dealt with, right? Where we have an initial criminal in Tim Blake Nelson's character who's doing something that's clearly wrong, tampering with someone's car in a way that could be really dangerous and cause them harm. And then we have the follow-up crime in which not only does Davis encourage Katie to drive his car knowing that it's compromised, but what's the really screwed up part is tampering with the seatbelt. Like, that's the tell, right? This is not, I want you to crash the car and I want my rival to feel badly. Like, you are actively trying to kill someone at that point. And so the idea that you take this interesting moral dilemma, and yes, I'm all for creative punishment, I'm all for, what's the quote in this episode? The karma is some kind of consequence. Like, I like that kind of justice. This does not feel like karma. This does not feel like a karmic balance, considering really the only punishment is that Davis knows that Katie is a better driver than him and will eventually get better and drive anyway, which is something he already knew.
I mean, maybe I could justify it in saying, like, he did all this and he completely compromised himself morally, blackened his own soul, and he's still going to lose anyway. You know, he did it to secure his future. And what is his future going to be now that he's at least psyched out? But we should add that he also tries to run Charlie off the road point too. You know, like just straight up murder her that way. And I also think Davis McDowell, there's so much Davis McDowell in this episode. And Charles Melton with Love and Respect is like a good looking dude, but maybe not like my favorite guest star that we've had so far this season. So I think that perhaps if it had been a different casting in that role, I would have been more invested in this episode overall. The other really, really, I thought really fun wrinkle though in this episode is that the claim of bullshit, the most enjoyable claim of bullshit we get in this episode comes not from Charlie, but from Donna Owens, Tim Blake Nelson's wife. And so it's this idea, I mean, it feeds back to our superpower debate, right? Like, is it a superpower or does Donna just know her husband so much, right? Of course, that when he lies, she can call bullshit. And the way she delivers it, it gave me a little thrill. I loved that moment. And the fact that he like capitulates and confesses based on his wife calling him out for what he did and his lies. I loved that. What did you think, Rob?
So really what you're saying is this first third-party bullshit we get is like the it's like the Last Jedi wrinkle where we're all superheroes. You know, we're all able to call bullshit.
It's the broom boy of, yeah. Sure. Sure.
I think that's it. No, I really like that element too. And especially like the specific call out, I think, is executed really well. And it, I mean, the development of Tim Blake Nelson's character in this episode is interesting, because I think you could argue that even though he does something awful in tampering with someone's car, he ultimately like does prove out to be the person that his wife thinks he is, right? Like the person who would take responsibility for it. And really, another interesting structural wrinkle in this episode, who confesses to the crime before Charlie can even fully prove it. Like he is completely putting it out there, completely taking responsibility for what he thinks to be a horrendous error in judgment that ultimately caused his daughter to go into a coma.
Yeah. And we see the events play out twice, kind of, in this episode in a way I don't think we get, you know, because you have like the Katie wrinkle. You know what I mean? Like there's different things that add various wrinkles to this episode, like him switching the seatbelt, et cetera. And so it's again, I like them messing with the format. Some of it felt like a little repetitive to me in this episode, but I like them messing with the format as much as they can to keep things sort of exciting and twisty. I want to follow up on something you brought up last week, which is the social media aspect. We were talking about tracking the social media elements in these episodes. So let's run through them really quickly. In the first episode, we've got the Dick Cloud, right? Like that's a key point to everything.
Iconic.
And the second episode, we've got our poor guy, Subway employee, has a thriving TikTok, right? So that's an aspect. Episode three, I think, is just like the radio. I don't think there's like another social media that's sort of old media. That's fine. Number four is the clearest one, the Krampus prank, plus the murder podcast, plus the YouTube reviewer music kids at the end, right? That's a triple whammy.
Yep.
Time of the Monkey, which I called Monkey Time earlier, and you corrected me gently, but Time of the Monkey, I think, doesn't have anything, right? Am I missing something from Time of the Monkey?
Well, yeah, but that's a, you know, it's a home for elderly people. They're not,
it's true.
They're not on the gram like that.
You just have the Fletcher. I mean, but the Fletchers should have their own TikTok channel they talk about various SARS guards.
I listen to that podcast.
100%. And then episode six, we've got Kathleen and Michael trending on Twitter. And then in this episode, we've got Davis is live streaming sort of his encounter here. Do you have any sort of unified theory around the use of digital media here? Or is it just like an attempt to keep this feeling not dated like Columbo, but anchored in the here and now?
I suspect it's the latter. And there's also another occurrence in this episode too, where I think his family first sees the like inciting incident between these two drivers, in which there's like a fist fight at the track. Also see that on some kind of social media as well. And so it does seem like with a lot of these, it's either the inciting incident or it's something to kind of urge the plot along, which makes me think it's more kind of grounding device, as you're saying, than any kind of thematic framework or any kind of moralistic judgment. Because we've seen it used for, honestly, some really good purposes and mostly kind of neutral ones. And it doesn't feel judgmental at all.
It might just be part of, I mean, we need to keep our eye on it, but it might be all part of this whole Charlie isn't PI, she isn't working for the cops. So sort of how does, you know, she's not going to a crime scene to gather clues. She doesn't have the recourses of using like, you know, calling in the cops or something like that. Not that she should. So yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting element. I hope that either we get a chance or someone gets a chance to ask the creators about that if they had any anything bigger in mind about any of that. All right. What else do you want to say about this episode? Like what else worked for you? What didn't work for you in this episode?
Well, I have to ask you, you know, considering Tim Blake Nelson was the guest star you were most excited to see.
Yeah.
And it turns out we were wondering, is he going to be a criminal or a victim? And he's kind of both in this episode.
Yeah. That's perfect. That's perfect for Tim.
They really walked that line.
He can do both so perfectly. Do you have a favorite Tim Blake Nelson performance?
I'd have to think about it. I mean, he's definitely a guy who like pops in almost everything you see for exactly the quality you've highlighted, right? That like that ambiguity, and there's kind of an aw shucksiness to him that's always pleasant to see pop up in pretty much anything.
Yeah. Tim Blake Nelson just using his natural accent all the time and everything always is a joy. Iconic, of course, the first time he's on my radar is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Just an incredible performance. But also in Watchmen a couple years ago. Really, really good in Watchmen.
Phenomenal show.
Yeah. I'm never upset to see Tim Blake Nelson. I think I was just most upset in this episode that I didn't see more of him.
It's a little underutilized, for sure.
Could have been the whole episode, just him, honestly. Yeah, and like we should look at who we still have left on the board, because there's only a few more episodes, three more episodes. You and I, as we've mentioned, have seen episode 8, so we know who's popping in that. But like Stephanie Hsu, you know, Oscar nominee. Joseph Gordon-Levitt has yet to appear in anything we've seen. Rhea Perlman, Clea DuVall, Rowan Blanchard, everyone's favorite young adult actress. And of course, Ron Perlman in the flesh. So, you know, there's a few goodies left. And I don't know like how they're gonna appear, but okay, let me ask you. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, victim or criminal?
I think they're gonna go against type criminal.
Criminal. Rhea Perlman. Victim or criminal?
That one's tough. What's your feel for that?
A victim. Or like the mother of a victim or related to the victim somehow or whatever. Clea DuVall. Criminal or victim?
Do I know who Clea DuVall is?
Oh, she was in But I'm a Cheerleader with Natasha Lyonne. So I think that's probably why she's here. She's like in The Faculty, an episode of Buffy.
Oh, of course. Okay, yeah. No. Yeah, as soon as you said The Faculty, I know exactly who this is. Okay.
Yeah.
She is, I think she's going to be a criminal.
Yeah. Yeah, gotta be. All right, anything else you want to say about this episode of television, Rom?
There's a bit. I mean...
Yeah. Oh, what do you want to tell me about stock car racing that I may not know? Are you a stock car racing aficionado?
Well, let me tell you this.
What context am I missing?
You may not be into the sports, but you know, this is... I am a sportsman by day job, right?
Yes.
Like, I cover the NBA. When I saw the title of this episode, The Future of the Sport... Like, okay, now we're getting into my territory. Is it going to be, you know, like a 5-star recruit for football or basketball who like will do anything to get to the top of the class? Is it going to be the corrupt face of professional pickleball? Like, what is this going to be? And then, no, it's stock car racing in apparently small town Tennessee. Took a little bit of the wind out of my sails, if I'm being honest with you. Not the world I was hoping to inhabit for this episode.
How do you feel like stock car, do you know anything about stock car racing beyond what we saw here depicted? Can you judge the accuracy of what we saw?
I now know that you can compromise a car with a gear tie and a fish hook.
Yeah.
That's good to know. You know, just in case, you know, you never know when you might develop some enemies in the stock car community.
So if you, in your future, become a stock car racer,
yes,
you'll be checking the... under the bonnet, under the hood for fish hooks.
How could you not?
Yep, I agree.
I do think there's to your point about Davis earlier and that performance and that how much time we spend with that character, there is like a misallocation of resources here a little bit in terms of where the story focuses. And in particular, like we don't really spend any time with Katie. And so she becomes basically a plot device to urge it forward. That's kind of a shame. But even the time we do spend with Davis, like there is a connection between him and Charlie, for sure.
Oh, he tries to smooch her.
Tries to smooch her. She turns him away.
Yeah.
I actually thought that would be an interesting dynamic. Like we've explored lots of different things that are getting between Charlie and the truth.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't really seen any kind of romantic interest that might cause her to not see things totally clearly. And so I kind of thought that might be where we were headed. And so when that was a swerve, I was just wondering why we were spending so much time with him. Like the show clearly wants you, and this episode clearly wants you to identify with his economic circumstances, to understand why he might be desperate, and in some ways wants you to like him. But the end result, I don't feel particularly attached to him by the time the turn comes.
So funny. He's 32, and I know him best for playing a teenager on Riverdale, so I definitely thought he was younger than he is, Charles Melton. But and what I mean by one of the Reggies is that there was a different actor playing the role of Reggie in season one of Riverdale. And then he like went on to quote unquote bigger, better things, which I think was like 13 Reasons Why. And
is this the hot Reggie or is this the less hot Reggie?
They're both extremely hot. It's really hard to pick, but this is definitely Reggie. This is Darren number two. It's Reggie number two. Charles Melton, second Reggie. I'm trying to think of like who, like what if we put like Noah Centineo in this role or someone who's just like oozes a bit more charisma and likability.
Yeah.
Reggie's kind of a villain on Riverdale, so maybe I'm just predisposed to not really like Charles Melton, but like, and I'm not even actually that much of a devoted Riverdale. I regret that I know this much about Riverdale, if I'm being honest with you. But like, if you pick like a Noah Centineo or some other like sort of like young teen-centric idol actor to put in this role, and I am more predisposed to like be tender for towards them or to like root for the like kind of ship them with Charlie or something like that, then the evil turn feels a little bit sharper. But like this guy, I'm like, I don't like you from the start. I don't like you by the end. That's where I am. So
it's trouble. Have you seen The Recruit with Noah Centineo?
I have not. Have you?
I've seen part of it, and honestly, like, I mean, I think he would be great in this kind of role. There is not only the charisma, but like a doofy vibrato that he can pull off pretty well that I think could lend itself really well to like a stock car racer who's trying to be more macho than he is.
Yeah.
And you know, puffing his chest out a little bit. I think he could have been really cool in a role like this.
All right. So Hollywood, call us. We've got a lot of crowdsource ideas for future episodes of Poker Face, as well as some casting notes. And if you want to use Tim Blake Nelson again in another episode where he plays a completely different character, I promise I will not complain. I will pretend. By the time we get to Poker Face season 9, I will just pretend we've never seen Tim Blake Nelson on the show before and use him better this time. All right. Anything else you want to say about this episode of Poker Face?
I mean, we got an overt Deliverance reference in this episode. We've had a Heat reference previously. I'm just wondering, are the writers of this show just like crushing episodes of the Rewatchables and not telling us?
Okay, Rewatchables watch. We'll just start tracking
just
that.
Just putting it out there.
That sounds great. Next week's episode, again, we're not watching ahead generally. We watched ahead just because of some scheduling stuff here around the Spotify offices, but an incredible, like, I cannot wait to, if you watch this episode, you're like, this is a little weaker. Maybe the last one's a little weaker. Maybe I'm out on Poker Face. I just really urge you to stick around.
Yes.
For next week's episode, which is wild on 9 different levels that I can't wait to talk to Rob about. I'm so proud.
A little, a little saucier, a little spicier than I would have anticipated.
I'm going to say controversial. That's what I will say.
I think it will
this be. This episode of television is. All right. So we will see you all next week for that episode of Poker Face. Please keep sending your ideas for season 2 episodes of Poker Face. Weigh in on Superhero Debate. If you have Lea Michele literacy ideas, any and all comers, hoppusanddragons@gmail.com. This episode was produced by Steve Allman. We'll see you next time. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.